And the bottom line is, if we have to leave, we leave by that door in an orderly and controlled fashion and assemble outside and watch the building burn. All right? The Waste Board is a joint committee of the County Council and five district councils, and voting is by a straight majority. Agendas and papers you should have all got by now, or got them off your iPhones or whatever. I don't think there's anybody here recording or indeed filming it, but should someone turn up and then require to do that, you have the right of asking them not to film you if you so desire. There will be an audio recording of this meeting, so all our hugely sage pronouncements will be on record. And now we come to apologies for absence, please.
Yes, Chair. We've received apologies from Councillor Jill Randall-Green.
Okay, thank you very much. Declarations of interest. Are there any declarations of interest anent to this agenda that people want to make? No. The minutes of the meeting held on the 14th of December, which are on pages 5 to 12 of your agenda, are those who were here then willing to confirm that they represent a true record of what was said and done?
Okay,
thank you. Public question time. We don't appear to have any public questions, do we? No, thank you. So there you are. That comes on now to item 5, which is Mickey. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Those of you who are sitting there might want to move, because I'll be talking to the slides that are behind you, so I don't know if you want to...
Yeah, their seats off on the left. Your chairs haven't got casters on them, otherwise it'd be so much easier. When you're comfortable, give us a nod and then we can go on.
I'm perfect, Mr. Chairman.
Johnny good? Off we jolly well go then.
Okay, so this is really a for information and for discussion item, and it is going to be quite a canter through, and hopefully as I go through it, you'll realise why I'm having to canter through it, because there's so much in this, but I wanted to do it now because it is so significant. You'll recognise that the information that was in the board paper was pretty much the same information that was in the member information sheet before Christmas, and that's because the consultations that had been planned to have started already haven't quite yet started, but the latest rumours are that some of those consultations will come out next week. Should also give credit to all of this and the information sheet you had before Christmas to Julie Sale, sitting over there from the Waste Partnership, who's one of those people you don't see very much of, but actually is there beavering away doing all the hard work. And it is one of the things we're doing now is actually getting more of the team, when there's a relevant item to them on the board, to come along to board meetings, because I think it's important they see and hear the discussions and the products of their hard work. So I'll give you a bit of summary and context about the national strategy, and then I'll try and focus, and what I want to do is just focus on the biggies, because there's a lot in there. And then I'll talk a bit about the implications for us and what we'll be doing next and what we expect to happen next. So it got delayed a few times, but finally came out just before Christmas. Clearly Brexit influenced that. It's extremely significant. It's the first major policy in this sphere nationally since 2013. There are 19 promises of consultation in there, and some of them are absolutely game-changing. You know, for example, the polluter pays extended producer responsibility. It has the potential to be way more significant even than something like landfill tax, which kind of changed the game in terms of recycling in this country. So it is very significant. So, yeah, the key themes throughout it are a life cycle approach. So that's rather than just kind of focusing just on us, if you like, kind of at the end of the pipe, it's focusing on production and consumption and us, and thinking all of those things have got to work together to achieve their ambitions. Strong polluter pays emphasis throughout, as you can tell from the title. It's starting to move away from thinking waste is just waste, but thinking about waste as a resource, which is clearly how we think about it. Quality, again, that'll be familiar. We always talk about quality here, and hence why we were the only local authority held up in the mentioned even in the whole strategy as a kind of case study around consistency and for our kind of focus on providing inputs into UK industry and for our innovation in rolling out food waste. Again, things you've heard me talk about before in terms of that move away from just measuring things in terms of weight to measuring things in terms of carbon, and the more and more we recycle, that starts to become more and more important. I'll touch on that again later. And it does mark a much more interventionist approach from government, and you'll already have seen that in kind of proposals before Christmas in terms of banning certain products like cotton buds and whatnot. So we do like nearly everything in there. Again, pleased that we're recognised. There are some things that we're concerned about, charges at recycling centres. You'll remember us talking about that risk, and that's still there and more likely to happen. Free garden waste collections, again, I'll touch on this later, but that was a surprise for everyone in terms of what that appearing in the strategy. There's still a threat of an incineration tax, but it's kind of shifted a bit further away, and timescales are a bit of a concern for us. So because there are such significant changes proposed, they'll need primary legislation. So government will need to put some enabling legislation into an environment bill, which has already got a timetable slot. They're a bit slower than they wanted to be in terms of consultation. So the rumour is it'll be just 8-week consultations. And when you consider the scale of stuff that they're proposing, that is a concern to us and the rest of the sector. The biggies here, though, everything is subject to consultation. Some of them, like extended producer responsibility, may even need 2 rounds of consultation, one on the broad approach, one on the detail. So lots of things aren't really proposed to come in until 2023. The one thing that probably is proposed to come in, though, is, you know, higher targets come 2025. And actually, that doesn't leave the whole sector that long between the enabling policy coming in and the expectation of where we'll all be in the future. I'll circulate the slides, so I won't go through this in detail, but it is worth kind of putting in context a lot of kind of what the broad picture actually comes from stuff that's been debated in Europe for a number of years, and the circular economy package that was adopted and that the UK has said it will bring forward in full. So that's where you get this idea of mandatory extended producer responsibility or the focus on plastics. And the other bit of context, obviously, there are a lot of kind of industrial and green growth strategies that came out from government, and it really does fit in there. So it's kind of, you know, that move to resources can almost be characterised as, rather than seeing waste as a cost of growth, seeing it as almost an enabler for growth. So the clean growth strategy talked about zero avoidable waste by 2050, working towards eliminating food waste to landfill by 2030. The industrial strategy talked about doubling resource productivity by 2050. The environment plan talked about zero avoidable plastic waste by the end of 2042. So it's very much along that theme. I've also put the kind of national infrastructure one there because I think that's important, because actually if we're going to do what's in this policy, for example, just on plastics, you know, industry are saying, well, we need 10 to 20 more plastics processing facilities like Viridor have got over in Kent. So clearly getting that infrastructure in place across the country in time to deliver these policy aspirations is an important piece of the jigsaw. So that's the context. Moving to the kind of summary of the key areas, and this is by far the most significant area, extended producer responsibility. So that's about brand owners, manufacturers taking responsibility for their products, and kind of the extended bit is kind of traditionally a producer is responsible for just those first bits, but it's saying no, you're now actually responsible for the whole of it in terms of, you know, the collection, the recycling, the what ends up in landfill or energy from waste. So struggling to work out how to explain it, because it's not like the deposit return scheme where people can go, oh, it's like Corona, it's really obvious what that is. It is a bit more of a complicated thing. So I thought kind of giving an illustration of how it might work. This is absolutely not something that's come from the strategy. It's just kind of an illustration of the steps that might be involved, and hopefully you'll see as we go through it how it links into other elements that in the strategy. So the fundamental principle is that producers become responsible for the full cost of collecting, sourcing and disposing of their products. They therefore probably need to pay some kind of placed on the market fee or deposit into some kind of body. So that body needs creating, the rules with which that needs creating clearly need to be debated. Probably what would happen is that if you're placing onto the market something which is difficult to recycle, you'll pay a higher fee. If you're placing onto the market something which is much easier to recycle, say like a PET plastic bottle, you would pay a lower fee. Clearly then there's somebody that needs to then dictate which are the kind of worse environmental products and label those so that consumers can make choices. Clearly then to get some money back out of the system, the producers would have to evidence that actually the products they'd placed on the market had flowed all the way through and gone back into kind of being reused again. So you can see that that requires a whole load of data and tracking that we just don't have as a country at the moment. Clearly, the expectation is that this will lead to money flowing to local authorities to support collections, recycling and disposal. But they won't, they're unlikely to just pay us whatever we say we want for doing that, so they're likely to kind of set some kind of benchmark for what they will pay. The two drivers for that are kind of likely to be, well, this is broadly what we expect this to cost, so kind of upper quartile industry performance, and some kind of way of going, well, actually, if you're Tower Hamlets, you've probably got slightly different costs in terms of recycling than we have in Somerset compared to another authority. So they'll probably need to come up with some way of classifying areas to work out how much we might get. Brands retaining ownership of packaging and the value of materials. So again, you'll probably recognise how that links through to the idea of us having a review point in terms of our recycling risk share mechanism. Because if this kind of policy came in 2023, clearly we would need to look again, as everybody would, in terms of how you do recycling risk share. Government pleasingly have recognised that actually there's a big cost in terms of transition from one service model to another, and so they've recognised the need for some funding to do that. So, as I say, that's not, you know, exactly what it will be like, but it does show the kind of elements that would need to be there. So that matters, because currently businesses are paying about 10%, so it's moving to full cost. The expectation is that because you're placing the responsibility back on the producers, that drives them to improve their packaging design, think about the recyclability, reusability, repairability of the materials they use, drives it through to consumer information, so they're able to kind of choose, do I want that identical product, say, in packaging that's environmentally bad or environmentally good? We're expecting, or everybody's expecting, that leads to a big focus on quality. So there's a quote from one industry player saying, actually, we expect that to make curbside sort type systems like we obviously have and will have in the future far more desirable and affordable. And crucially, it should stimulate that demand for secondary plastics and the need for more UK infrastructure. And the biggie in terms of the financial implication for us is that the local authority costs associated with packaging should be paid for by packaging firms rather than taxpayers as now. So next step, and we're expecting this consultation to start next week, and that will probably be around choice between, well, the underlying principles that guide any extended producer responsibility scheme and broadly which of a number of systems will be chosen. So the kind of degree of control there is or competition, how money flows around a system, whether it's linked through to targets. As I said before, we don't think that's going to be implemented until 2023, and that's, you know, that's obviously subject to broader things happening in the world and in politics. Extended producer responsibility in the strategy does go beyond that. They're looking to kind of harmonise and make more consistent the approach, because obviously there's already schemes for batteries, small electrical equipment and cars. They're also saying they're going to look at other waste streams, so textiles, construction products, tyres, fishing gear, slightly odd one from our perspective, but I think that's probably driven by kind of marine pollution, and bulky waste, which will be an important one for us in terms of recycling centres. It links through to a whole load of other policies as well in terms of a tax on packaging that doesn't have a decent proportion of recycled content. The deposit return scheme, which is a type of extended producer responsibility. So there's a big risk there. You're creating two things to do, one policy aim and a kind of complicated overlap between them. Talked about the bans on some products. We welcome very much the proposal that there will be standards on kind of bioplastic and newer materials that promise certain things, but actually we don't know kind of the detail of what they are, and actually we need to be clear on what they are so that we and industry can then develop the tools to manage them. And clearly it links through to collections consistency, because if you've got big brands like Coca-Cola doing things, they want to know that actually if they say something is recycled, it can be recycled around the whole country. So for us, as we've always said to you, you know, the best protection we can have in this world of policy uncertainty is to keep focusing on quality, and we believe our curbside sort system does that, delivering high quality materials that are always in demand in the UK. The additional materials we're proposing to collect under Recycle More, again, we thought we were on the right track, and this kind of just gives us more confidence that actually collecting those things is the right thing to do. But the devil is in the detail. Probably one of the most significant things, and the one that's almost, it's hard to get your head around quite how it will change, is, you know, if brands and producers are owning that material and kind of controlling the system, then actually they're going to have a lot more influence over what happens and what we do in the future. And obviously there's that uncertainty whilst we're promised as a you know, local authority, a kind of, you know, billions of money from this. We all know until you see it, that can be a little bit uncertain. And a kind of minor one, there will obviously be implications for our recycling centres from bulky waste and things like that. So moving on to the deposit return scheme. And again, you'll probably be more familiar with what this is. You pay a deposit, if you return it, you as a consumer get some money back. The idea is it improves the quality and quantity of recycling. So you're then collecting a clean stream of materials. Clearly, we already collect a clean stream of materials because we collect them separately in the curbside. The big thing it's expected to do is to reduce litter, though lots of people are saying, actually, this kind of system could cost a fortune to implement. So people are banding around numbers like £1 billion to put in this, which is a hell of a lot of money for something that also is covered by under the Extended Producer Responsibility Scheme. So what does it mean for us? We don't know what materials will be covered. We don't know what sizes of materials will be covered. So the assumptions you make on that have a big impact on how it impacts on us. But the assumption is if people are going to get 10 or 20p back each time they return something, they're going to want that 10 or 20p. Therefore, they'll be returning it through a deposit return scheme and not putting it in their curbside box. That takes out a whole load of material that we currently get a lot of income from. It also takes out material that currently we're not capturing and is in residual waste. Because of our collection system and the quantity we recycle, we believe that actually we will lose money. We're talking kind of hundreds of thousands of pounds, but until you know what materials and what sizes, it's quite hard to predict that absolutely. But DEFRA do seem to have accepted from the many conversations I've had that, you know, quality recyclers like us will be negatively impacted. Clearly, you know, at a point in time, everybody needs to decide on their vehicles and their boxes. That then becomes essentially fixed for a period of time without incurring significant costs. So, you know, in the same way that cardboard and internet shopping grew and, you know, our vehicles were fixed, that's a kind of a worry for us, but one we just have to manage. So, yeah, we'll need to closely scrutinise that consultation, again, which we expect to come out next week. But we're pretty confident it will be a financial loser for us. We'll clearly work with our district partners in terms of litter and street scene. But, again, they're kind of equivalently sceptical at officer level. And I guess our view, or my view, certainly, and our view as officers, is actually, with the scale of change the strategy is proposing overall, is this the right priority at the right time? And I think we kind of think it probably isn't. And certainly I kind of spoke at a Chartered Institute of Waste Management event last Friday, and that was the general conclusion of authorities across the southwest as well. So limited impact on recycling centres. Some people talk about, well, they could host deposit return points. I don't quite get that, because it's kind of like, actually the whole point is for it to make it convenient, so you're more expecting people to return them to supermarkets and shops and places like that, or be on the high street where these things are consumed on the go. Litter, yeah, I mean, the evidence is that it does improve litter. They're making claims for savings for street scene services, and certainly the initial evidence we've seen seems questionable about actually whether there really are cashable savings there for district partners. Okay, so again, very linked to the other ones. Consistency in collections. Thankfully, it's moving away from kind of the previous kind of when Eric Pickles was around, that idea of kind of consistency means you've got to do it all weekly. What they're talking about here is proposing a standard set of materials, firming up what is currently just guidance in terms of the collection systems that, that RAP encourage. Clearly, we follow one of those, but we're expecting that to be firmed up. We're also expecting a focus on quality to flow through this. So there were rumours last week that the economic kind of currently you kind of you can use an economic rationale to say, oh, no, I can't do curbside sort because it's far too expensive. I need to do commingled. They're talking about removing that reason so that you're only left with a kind of environmental or a practical justification. So it's a bit technical, but it's about kind of further notching up that kind of drive towards curbside sort quality systems. Again, that should then drive standard labelling. There are proposals around mandatory separate weekly food waste collections. Clearly, we're well placed for that. The surprise being free garden waste collections. And there's no clarity on what the policy goal they're trying to achieve through that is. It could be because they're worried about kind of all the compostable or allegedly compostable kind of alternatives to traditional plastics coming onto the market and how they're going to be dealt with. It could be a simple kind of, actually, if you collect it for free, you can probably whack 5% onto your recycling target. We're concerned about that on kind of environmental grounds in terms of the disincentive it could create to home composting, and it probably comes with a large bill. So, as I say, there's no detail, so we've made some assumptions, and we think it could cost £6 million once you take account of the lost income, the diversion from recycling centres, and the diversion from what's in residual waste. That could go up by millions. It could be millions lower, but you're definitely talking a significant amount of money, so we'll be making those points back to government when that comes through in a consultation. We're expecting that one might not be in the next week's consultations, but probably will be in the first half of this year. There's lots of interesting stuff in there, which I won't go into detail on kind of around improving urban recycling and kind of exploring collecting commercial and household waste together in areas like that. So again, a couple of illustrations, and this is just kind of one industry player's kind of guesses as to what might this future look like. So, you know, suggestions that you might have that kind of sustainability rating on products, and clearly that's going to be challenging. I'd imagine if I was Tetra Pak and I was probably looking at one of the lower ratings, you'd be doing a lot of lobbying, and things change over time, don't they, in terms of as techniques come on board to kind of recycle stuff. So that's a complicated area, but it should flow through to kind of something which is simpler for consumers to go, right, I know I can definitely recycle that, and probably then, and I know what box I can put that in. So again, we can start to see a future where things are a lot easier for consumers because there's that kind of consistency. So a few things that could impact on recycling centres. They're talking about quality standards. We don't know what that means, but we think actually, especially given the review we've just done and the efficiencies we found, but the extra Sunday afternoon opening and the sites we've got across the county, I think we're feeling, without seeing the detail, we're feeling relatively confident that any minimum standards wouldn't be underneath. There is a firming up of that threat of saying, okay, what the government refers to as DIY waste, kind of rubble, asbestos, plasterboard, saying actually they're proposing that they will change the regulations, and that could add back around £600,000 cost to us, which is clearly an SCC cost. And that's kind of making some assumptions, because obviously when we introduced those charges, which lots of other authorities did, it significantly reduced that. And I don't know what your experience is, but certainly on kind of like my local Facebook page, you see people saying, oh, I've got a whole load of hardcore. Does anybody want it before I take it down the recycling centre? And by and large, it goes. And that's great. That's reuse, isn't it? That's what we want. So it will move stuff the wrong way in the waste hierarchy, if you know what I mean, as well as costing us money. Some really good stuff about reuse, reuse shops, but much more than that. And there's a whole broader theme about waste reduction and reuse, and it's kind of actually going, it's not just about reuse, it's about repair, it's about designing things so they can be repaired, designing things so they last longer, supporting remanufacturing markets, lots of technical stuff that I don't pretend to understand about introducing a whole new set of quality standards in terms of refurbishing and remanufacturing things. So there's some really great stuff, and you'll hopefully remember that we've already got in our business plan to say, yeah, we recognise we need to do a bit more in this area, so we'll be interested to see as future things come out. But the point to make is as national targets ramp up over time, actually this is an area that will need to have a lot more focus on it if we're to achieve those higher levels, because just recycling wouldn't get us there in the most efficient way. Touch on data a bit and targets, just because it will actually change things. So I've already mentioned that move away from weight-based towards carbon-based reporting. And again, hopefully you'll remember that we've always been a high flyer, top 10% in England in terms of carbon savings, mostly because of the way we collect, the quality we collect, the quantity we collect, and the fact that it then stays in the UK, often in a closed loop. So that's the best thing for carbon. But so it's welcome to see that. A lot, which I won't go into detail now, in terms of the food food chain, if you like, and in businesses reporting around food waste surplus and food waste. Clearly, you're going back to the extended producer responsibility. There's a massive kind of amount of data that needs tracking in terms of what materials, what chemicals and things are inside the different materials, so that when they're broken down, so all that kind of stuff, you know, a massive amount of work. Talk about targets for local authorities. At the moment, it's talking about kind of advisory ones, but you never know where that will, whether that will drift to. There's a recognition that actually, you know, we are in a different place to very urban authorities, and we're in a different place to suburban authorities. So actually it may be that the kind of authorities will be classified by type and have different targets. But yeah, and clearly recycling, packaging, plastics targets, there's a lot of targets coming down the way that will be very challenging to meet. And again, to give that an illustration, I'm not expecting you to be able to see the detail. The picture on the left shows, well, if you measure things, materials by weight, by avoided energy, by avoided CO2 or how much money, you get a completely different list. So measuring different things drives different behaviours. Again, that'll be, I'll play back to that point about garden waste. If you just measure weight, it weighs a lot, so you go, let's recycle it if money was no other option. If you're measuring avoided carbon, you wouldn't make that choice necessarily. You'd focus on something else. And again, the slide on the right is from Suez, who have been doing a lot of pushing around the concept of kind of local authority DNA. So they're saying, well, what would be a reasonable target for different types of local authorities? So from the left to the right, you move from very rural through rural, suburban, urban, very urban. You can see actually their view is actually different types of local authorities have a kind of a realistic different level of recycling that they could be expected to achieve. Business recycling, again, this is just an area we need to do a lot more thinking around, and we have already alluded to that in the business plan, but there's a much stronger focus on business waste and some requirements on businesses around the kind of same set of consistency of materials, especially where kind of they're kind of producing waste which is akin to household waste, which will be true for a lot of Somerset businesses. Talk about small businesses coordinating collections to reduce costs, and that's something we're kind of talking to a couple of areas across Somerset to go, actually, are there different ways of thinking about this? Could you do a collaborative procurement which saved businesses in your area money and meant you could notch up the kind of the amount of recycling rather than just getting what a commercial company is prepared to give you? So an area that we need to do more thinking and working on, and we want to see more of the detail, because at the moment it's very high level. There's lots more in there, which I'm not going to talk through, but, you know, two-tier working, encouragement towards partnership working, green procurement, kind of references in terms of national government. And I know a lot of partners have been thinking about this in terms of single-use plastics, but I think there's more work to be done there and more thinking to be done. Good things said about anaerobic digestion and energy from waste, which is pleasing, given we were worried around the last budget time that they were kind of going to hammer energy from waste. As they see receipts from landfill tax going down, lots on the food chain, some stuff around planning, but not very much detail, but saying absolutely the right things. Let's focus on this. Let's get planning policy aligned with what the resources and waste strategy wants to achieve. And again, that's something I'd been pushing for in conversations with DEFRA. Nodes on waste crime, some funding for innovation and research, and threats around potentially if policies don't work, they're saying, well, we might have to introduce that incineration tax. If we can't drive increased food waste, we might have to ban food waste to landfill. I don't really understand what that ban might mean, but it's certainly there as a potential threat. So timetable going forward, as I say, we're expecting those first three consultations on extended producer responsibility, on the deposit return scheme and on consistency. We're expecting them to be for 8 weeks and to start next week. Then we're expecting consultations on mandatory weekly food waste collections, the free garden waste, targets and bioplastic, and then the other, however many is, 12, can't do my maths, yeah, 12 potential consultations to flow after that with, you know, most policies not coming in then until 2023. So it's going to be a busy couple of years, and I guess that harks back to that point about, oh yeah, procurement that we're going through at the moment. Actually, there is not going to be policy certainty for a couple of years, and then actually we won't be able to see the extent to which the policies are impacting successfully or the real world impact they have on the ground for a period after that. So we're in for a good few years of change. So we'll clearly be responding to those consultations. We'll be working through SMG, as we always do on these kind of things, clearly working regionally through national associations. We're thinking of doing some kind of briefings locally. Clearly, we want to get our MPs on board, those kind of things. Particularly pushing around deposit return scheme and garden waste, where we don't feel they're the right thing, and we feel they'll financially impact on us. And Julie's also leading work for us in terms of developing our own strategy. Again, that's in the business plan, which we always said, well, we need to see what's coming down nationally before we can populate our own strategy. And that is it. I told you it was a quick canter through.
Right. Any questions or comments?
Yes, Chairman.
Yes, Nigel.
I welcome it in principle. You can tell it's been designed by a civil servant rather than the businessman by simply looking at the way it operates. I mean, it's fiendishly complicated. Mm. And one thing I particularly noticed is the producers responsible for furniture and mattresses. Well, some of those things last for years and probably find the original producers out of business by the time the thing gets scrapped. And the other problem it's going to cause on consumer goods, guess who's going to pay? The person who goes and buys it for his mattress or even his food from the supermarket. So it's going to stoke inflation if one's not careful.
Yes.
Thank you, Chairman. I think you're going to have to be really careful about the garden waste issue, because you're going to get many of these fly-by-night contractors trimming people's hedges and then shoving all that waste in the garden bins. So you're going to be clearing up behind them across the country. Mm-hmm. 600,000 might be quite a modest bill. I think it'll be a lot more than that. I think you need to be careful about it. And the other thing I'm a little concerned with, where they were talking about beverage containers in the bins, the general public do have an expectation, and I think they have a right to believe that their refuse will be taken away. They are paying rates. We're not reducing rates. We're probably going to increase them by 2.9% or whatever, I guess. I can't say what it's going to be. But I do feel that they have that expectation and that we ought to step up to the counter and meet that. Because if we start picking and choosing what we're going to let them put in these bins and what you're going to take away, where's the residue going to go? And I'll tell you where it's going to go. It's going to go in fly tip, which is going to cost us as district councils more and more money to clear up. So I have some concerns.
Just to clarify, we're definitely not proposing to take anything away from the curbside recycling. It's just actually residents may choose, if a policy came in like deposit return scheme, to do something else with it rather than put it into their curbside box. They may choose to take it back to the supermarket and get their 10-20p deposit back, but it's not us taking something away from them.
Thank you.
Hi. A couple of questions, Mickey. The first one is on the deposit scheme. Do you think that I work quite a lot in America and have been to some of these recycle places just by accident to where I happen to be, and there's a constant queue of homeless people that collect these bottles to take them to the centres and have to be cashed in. I just wondered if that happens in some of the, not necessarily in Somerset, but what happens in some of the larger towns? Will you have to have somebody on site there dealing with these people trying to get the deposits from the bottles? The second question is on the business side of things. Do you know what percentage, and if it was written in there, I'm sorry because I missed it, of business waste there is compared to domestic waste in Somerset as a tonnage? Because as you know, you started touching on there that it's something we should possibly look at. And I just wonder what the terms in terms of tonnage we're dealing with.
On the first one, I mean, it's difficult to predict, but yeah, certainly in Germany, people are getting the habit of leaving their bag of bottles outside their house, expecting that, and what does happen in reality is that somebody less fortunate then will then take them back to the supermarket. So yeah, it's certainly a foreseeable implication. It's hard to predict because we don't know what materials it will be, how much it will be, where the, you know, how you'll take them back. So yeah, potential risk, but one will be able to understand more about when we see the detail in the consultation. In terms of, well, Julie or Bruce might be better able to answer this, but yeah, there's different categories of waste. There's kind of household waste, municipal waste, which is kind of stuff which is a bit similar, commercial waste and industrial waste. And certainly if you look across the southwest, I remember because I had it in some slides the other day, the amount of commercial waste is way more than the household waste. And probably industrial waste is also higher than household waste in total. And I think that's a really interesting point for us to reflect on in the future as kind of our role as kind of place shapers for waste overall, be it in Somerset or be it across the southwest, because some of this infrastructure will have to reflect a regional need rather than, or a sub-regional need at least, rather than even our need. So yeah, very, yeah, more significant amounts and something we need to do more to understand. But one of my worries is we might get targets for something where we don't have levers over it. So that's one of the things we'll be looking out for when the consultations come through. Bruce, do you want to?
Bruce? Yeah, I'm not going to be able to provide you with the answer to the question, but Mickey's absolutely right. Commercial waste classification is very broad. Overall, it's far greater a tonnage than household waste. But that within that broad classification, there are very various different sorts of commercial waste coming from the massive variety of different commercial premises. The bit we're really talking about is what I would kind of refer to as household equivalent commercial waste, which is relatively small scale and can be dealt with in a similar manner to the waste that we manage from households. I think it's unlikely we would get into dealing with much larger arisings, for which there is already a very effective commercial marketplace for managing that waste, I think. We can give you numbers if you prefer.
I was thinking is because some of the runs that we do through the towns and through the villages, there's businesses all the way through that have like shops and people like that, they have a separate collection which is paid for, which is already on our route, and it's probably something that we could be offering a service and making some returns on it, possibly.
I don't think it makes a difference who puts the bottles back in the recycling bins in the deposit things, as long as the bottles go back into it. If someone has got the initiative, and I believe in America they now have fairly wealthy people who are running gangs of impoverished people to go round and collect these bottles and put them back into the recycling business, I think that's a good thing in a way, because one, you are actually giving people a small income, and also you're making someone very rich, which is not the good thing. But at the end of the day, the bottles are going back into the thing for reuse and recycling, which is what we're endeavouring to do, to clear them from the tips and the... Now, you go down the cart gate in Yeovil, and all you can see is bottles and plastic containers lying on the verges. Well, if you had people out there who were being paid or could collect money from collecting those without going through Chapter 8 of the highway regulations, I know it's illegal, but there you are, they would do it. And I think the main problem we're going to have when we go through all this very, very complex and quite dedicated recycling and prevention of plastics and so forth is educating the general public that it is actually necessary for them to wholeheartedly participate, as opposed to saying, oh, go and chuck it in the bin, Billy, you know, is basically what you've got to stop that attitude. And you've suddenly got to get them into the mindset of getting into their car and clicking, that it has to be recycled and put in the proper container, and it has got a material advantage to them, and it's basically going to save an awful lot of the world's future pollution. But that's going to be the problem, and somehow that message has got to go out to everybody in Somerset and in the country. And that's going to be the big problem. Sorry, any more questions? Yes, Hazel.
Thanks, Chairman. I suppose I'm not sure how much of Somerset's waste in the residual waste is recyclable at the minute. I'm not sure how, really, how well we're doing and what evidence we have, because presumably that has to be part of the consultation. Well, in Somerset, you know, we only put 10% of things that are recyclable into the residual waste. Have we got a feel for what that is here?
Yeah, I can circulate that around. We probably shared it with the board probably just before you came onto the board. So as part, we do it every couple of years. We did it again, updated it again to inform the procurements. We did a composition analysis. So that's kind of taking a statistically robust average type of, you know, to be able to get an average for Somerset representing the different socio-demographics we've got. So we know that about half, basically, of what, from memory, of what's in a residual bin could be recycled at the curbside at the moment. We know that the single biggest one is 25% of that by weight is food. We did that into looking by weights and also by volumes, because clearly volumes is what matters to a resident as we're talking about, as we are moving towards three weekly in terms of how much can I fit in our bin. We also did a participation analysis to help us understand the behaviours in terms of recycling. So again, can share the highlights of that, and it's something we've reflected in our new contract in terms of making sure we get up to date a much more regular composition analysis, because clearly with this kind of policy, that's absolutely much more important than it's hitherto been in terms of keeping on top of that and informing. So,
yes, Jill.
I was asked about this consultation yesterday by a member of the public. What I would ask is that, well, we have to make certain that when we do go to consultation, we make it as simple as possible, and I mean that respectfully, because there is a lot of confusion. And I think that when you're going out there, if we can make it precise and easy for people to understand the merits and the reasoning and then why and the options, I think that will be so much better than, you know, no jargon, just simplified.
And stressing the advantage to them.
Yes.
This is the point, because people don't do it unless it's to their own advantage, generally, because the human being is an extraordinarily selfish sort of animal, I'm afraid. No, I'm not looking at you now. You have another biscuit, if you like.
But just to stress, this isn't a consultation we're doing or in control of. This will be DEFRA consultations, yeah. Yeah.
But we're going to be the transit thing, isn't it? It's going to come down from DEFRA, and we're the ones who are basically going to have to try and implement it and get it done. Yeah. So we are the connection, really, which we really have got to be able to punch that message out. Sorry, I'm a bit of a freak about this, but it just gets me very angry when I see things just going to waste and falling apart.
That's why you're in the church.
Pardon?
That's why you're in the church.
Oh, well, there you are. Any other comments? No? I'll then be happy, in accordance with the agenda, to note the contents of that dissertation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I'll share those slides with you. They were broadly the same slides that I shared with the Joint Waste Scrutiny Panel on Wednesday, who had a kind of similar discussion as you were, and noted the findings. So, but yeah.
Okay, then we move on to item six, and it's Mickey again, I think, isn't it?
Straight over to Sarah, actually.
Sarah, sorry. I didn't notice your name apart from Mickey. Okay, carry on, please.
Thank you. Right, this is the usual finance report that we bring to the board's February meeting with the latest in-year figures and the annual budget for 2019-20 for board approval, including the waste disposal savings. In addition, the board is asked to approve the addition of any remaining vehicle lease budgets to the Recycle More earmark reserve. Firstly, the in-year position. As ever, there is a summary table in section 2.1 of the report. Overall, the position at the end of December shows a forecast underspend of £984,000, which is 2.21% of the current budget. If I can start with the collection position, further work has been done to verify the garden waste numbers, and the forecast overspend has increased by £40,000 to £65,000 as at the end of December. However, if I can remind you that the increase in garden customers results in additional income collected locally, which more than covers the increase in cost to partners. As mentioned at the December board, the budget for the provision of lease vehicles remains unspent. Therefore, we request approval to add any unspent budget to the Recycle More earmark reserve. Currently, this unspent budget stands at £262,430. On the disposal side, the figures as at the end of December reflect the continuing good news on tonnage volumes. The underspend increased to 1.049 million at the end of December. However, it is always worth noting that factors such as adverse weather could affect the year-end position. Moving on to the Recycle More project funding, the in-year figures do not include any drawdown of the earmarked reserve for Recycle More. Available funds at the start of 2018-19 stood at £616,106. This doesn't include the proposed increase from the lease budget if this transfer is approved. Up to the end of December, only £152,613 of this earmarked reserve has been spent, although further costs will be incurred with the ongoing support from UNAMIA, our technical consultants, and specialised external legal support. Additional support has come from procurement, legal and finance staff at the administering authority also. It is expected that the current level of reserve will be adequate to cover the costs incurred during the procurement and mobilisation period. Turning to the annual budget for 2019-2020, this paper is seeking approval of the annual budget of £46,243,485, details of which are set out in Appendix 1. And it also seeks approval for the savings requested by Somerset County Council. The main changes to the collection budget since December's report are shown in point 3.1. A number of amendments have been made to the collection contract requirement, the most significant being the finalising of garden waste customer numbers. This follows on from the work done for the in-year position. The household numbers have been updated and the growth figures are detailed in point 3.1. The disposal budget is calculated using an estimated inflation across a number of disposal indices, which average out at 3.71%. The total net waste disposal uplift is £467,800. This includes inflation, housing growth, landfill tax, reversal of one-off savings, plus new savings for this year. We are seeking board approval for a number of savings on the disposal side. These are detailed in section 3.2 of the report. These are £525,000 of ongoing savings, but it should be noted that £225,000 of these are an extension of the current in-year savings agreed at September's board, the continuation of the HWRC contract saving of £200,000, and there's also a further £100,000 which is requested as a saving for 2019-20 only. The 2019-20 budget has moved by £132,000 from the figure given as a draft at the December board. £120,000 of this is adjustments made due to the garden waste figures. That's all I wanted to say in relation to the budget position. However, please also note the additional recommendation to the board to approve the managing director negotiates any final requirements with the relevant contractors in accordance with this annual budget. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments? My gosh. We certainly danced through that one then. Now we have on the recommendations 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 items, bullet points. Are we all happy to take those en bloc? Anybody demur with that?
No.
Right, okay, fine. Are we all happy then? I'm going to have a vote on this because there are agreements required there and approvals. So please can I show all those in favour of those recommendations en bloc?
Mr. Chair.
Okay, just in case anybody hiding in the corners, anybody abstaining or going negative? No. Okay, thank you. Sorry, I don't distrust your counting, but just to be on the safe side. Okay, that's fine. That is approved. That's item 6 approved. And we now move on to item 7, which is, just to make sure I get it right, there's only one name on the top of that paper, and that's yours.
I know. I thought you probably all heard enough from me after the strategy, okay. So I'm going to get Bruce to do this one.
Over to you, Bruce.
Thank you, Chair. Have I got any slides? Thank you. So just while Scott's setting that up, this is actually, I'm going to show a few slides to bring out the main points in the report, for which we'd like members to note. It is actually a public report. I think it may say...
We just deleted it.
You've just deleted it, thank you. It did say a second ago, and on my hard copy it says confidential. It's no longer confidential. And I don't intend to say anything confidential in this session. We have got the option of having a confidential briefing, as we've done in previous meetings, should there be some burning questions from members that we perhaps can't mention in public, which is representative of the press here. So, to cover the main items in the report, I'm going to do a progress report on that. We'd go through the timetable that we're on at the moment and deal with some key sort of issues that we're working on at the moment around affordability, depots and vehicles. So, in terms of the overall progress of the procurement project, the planned dialogue sessions that we've had with bidders, which was the last set of dialogue sessions that we'd programmed into the plan, took place before Christmas. And the intention was we would then go away after that and finalise all the suite of procurement documents so that they're ready to go out fresh in the new year. Unfortunately, we did come across, it was brought to our attention through our legal advisers at Somerset County Council, that there were some potential risks associated with the way the contracts were the draft contract had been formatted. It related, without going into too much detail about it, the fact that we are letting effectively a service contract, but this service contract requires certain works to be carried out in building new infrastructure on some of the depots. The lawyers tell me that there are different things that have to go in different types of contract like that, and there were some potential risks, very, very low risk in terms of likelihood, but they could have quite high potential impacts on particularly the County Council. So we had to instruct some specialist lawyers because that expertise was not available in-house, and this delayed that particular part of the procurement project plan. I want to emphasise, though, that didn't in itself have any impact at all on the overall project plan. We are still, and you'll see this from the timetable when I get to that, we are still very much on target for mobilising the contract and commencing the contract right on target. And it's worth actually noting, actually, because for some of the other work we've been doing recently, I've been going back and looking at what are our measures of success for this procurement. And I was looking at a document that I wrote in October 2017, which sounds quite a long time ago now, and we actually set out in this document that the date of the meeting when we would select the preferred bidder would be the 29th of March 2019. Coincidentally, I'd like to say rather more by perfect project planning rather than luck, that's exactly what we're intending to do. So I don't. The slippage has been very much about interim milestones and what you know doesn't actually affect the overall project plan. So where are we now? So those really moving on to the timetable. I just say so. Since we got the revised documents out, dialogue has been closed. We're having no further contact with the bidders. There's no more clarifications, questions coming through. We've still got a little bit of information to push out to them, but to all intents and purposes, this phase we're in at the moment is very much about them beavering away, fine-tuning their numbers, and chopping their prices, basically. So the deadline for the submission of those documents, I'm going to turn around a little bit so I can talk to this, is 27th of February, so almost exactly 2 weeks. And on the 27th of February at midday, we hope to see the bids coming in from our potential suppliers. We will then be evaluating those bids for a period of 2 weeks, which is going to be a very, very intense period, involving about 20 officers from partners, authorities, the County Council and the Waste Partnership, and our technical and legal consultants. We then go into a phase on between the 18th and 21st of March where we moderate those individual evaluations and reach moderated scores. And it won't be actually until after 4 o'clock on the 21st of March that we are able to combine the financial evaluation with the quality evaluation. It's only at that point that those two separate aspects of the evaluation are brought together. There is a Chinese wall between us at that time. I won't know, Mickey won't know, what the outcome of the financial evaluation is, and those that are doing the financial evaluation won't know what the outcome of the quality evaluation is. This means that you can't be influenced by knowing too much about, you know, is that bidder particularly more expensive or particularly cheaper, and that may affect some quality of judgment that we make. So the two are completely separate. So 4 o'clock, 21st of March, we've got to pull it together, and hopefully, and we won't actually know until this happens, what the results will be. We won't know who has presented the best offer to us, and whether it meets our sort of targets and measures of success. Come back to that in a little bit, because then on 22nd of March, providing we've done that, it's going to be a late night, I fancy, but we will then be presenting that to a range of different groups. First of all, I think it's the strategic management group of directors from partner authorities and their Section 151 officers. We're also going to be presenting it to the task and finish group, some of which you're represented on, and actually prior to that as well, we'll actually be doing a briefing for the joint waste scrutiny meeting as well. So there's a lot going on in that week. And hopefully we will then get some confidence from all of that, which will enable us to prepare a report to the board meeting, which I mentioned before, on the 29th of March, when we will be making a recommendation to you to select a preferred bidder. So the rest now is about how we, in a sense, deal with that, and there's certain sort of prescriptive processes that we have to abide by going forward from there onwards. So, working on the assumption that members have selected a preferred bidder on the 29th of March, we then have the normal council call in for 7 days, effectively 5 working days, for a procedural call in, but by members of the partner authorities. And depending on the outcome of that, providing that goes okay, we then enter the statutory Alcatel period, the standstill period, where we've notified the bidders and they have the opportunity to come back and challenge the outcome. They have 10 days to do that. But by this time, of course, we're very much into the pre-election period. And so we're giving, after that 10-day period, we're actually giving some time for ourselves to perhaps address some issues that are raised during the Alcatel period. But it also coincidentally means that we can avoid the key election, pre-election period, and we won't, providing we're in a position to do so, we won't be suggesting that we should announce publicly the successful bidder until the 13th of May, so the week after the elections. From the 13th of May, a whole different set of activities ensues, because we've then got to work very, very closely with our new supplier, and we've got to bring that to contract close with them, and for them to mobilise from that sort of date in May through to the 28th of March 2020, which is their first day of operation. And then they have a further 2 years to roll out the new service. So we are pretty much on target with all of that. That's not to say that there aren't some pretty big issues that we're dealing with, and I'll just deal with a few of those now. But going back to, you know, what is a successful procurement, really, we are working on the basis of the approvals that the board has made previously back in December 2016 when members accepted some proposals for rolling out Recycle More on the basis that it would deliver certain things. It would deliver certain service requirements, performance standards, and particularly an affordability regime. And we are still bound by that. It's still a member decision. And so this is, in a sense, our benchmark for success in terms of affordability. And I'll just remind you what members agreed in December 2016 was that new Recycle More services are estimated to deliver a combined total collection and disposal savings of approximately £1.7 million per annum before rollout costs. And began to say initial rollout costs was for both Kier and SWP were estimated at £2.2 million at that point in time. And there was decisions taken about arrangements for borrowing money to fund vehicles. Now, before we started the procurement, already that had started to change, and the reason that we didn't go forward with the negotiation with our incumbent contractor at that point in time was because the sort of the affordability issue started to slip away from us. Costs started to increase, savings started to reduce, rollout costs increased, and so on and so forth. So in a sense, we know what was acceptable at that time, and we know what wasn't acceptable shortly after that, really. And that's where we've got to try and pitch our evaluation now in comparison to what we expected to gain back at that time. The trouble is, 3 years ago, lots changed, not least some of the things that Mickey was referring to earlier on. And, you know, we've got significantly more properties in Somerset now. This was all predicated on waste going to landfill at this particular time when this evaluation effectively takes place. We'll be taking residual waste to a waste-to-energy plant, which is cheaper than landfill. So we've got to adjust all of these original assumptions so that they're still relevant and we can still benchmark ourselves realistically against what we set out to achieve. The other thing, of course, is we've had significant changes in the material market arrangement. We've had significant changes in the risk appetite of the bidders on the basis of that materials market. So we're doing all that work now. We're trying to prepare a blank template which will enable us to demonstrate that we have achieved what we set out to achieve, but we have got to take these various complicating factors into account. One of the other factors, just dealing with the rollout costs that are mentioned there, we've also got a situation, through the procurement, we've effectively internalised into the contract a lot of the rollout costs, both on both sides, and so they're relatively difficult to identify. We've got to try and be able to extract those from the bidders' bid models, and we haven't seen those yet, so we don't know how we're going to do that. But so this is a fairly complex piece of work, which I'm ably supported on by the finance team, the Sarah's team. So the other sort of significant piece of work to get ourselves in a state of readiness whereby we can ensure we hit that critical date of 28th of March 2020 is to is to get all our depots ready. I won't go back over this too much, but you'll remember at ISDS we tested out whether a new depot was necessary. We've shown through that it didn't provide best value for us to do that, and we had extreme difficulty in finding a suitable site in the west. So we are working with the sites that we've got at this moment in time, and they fall broadly into two categories. The first one is those sites which are owned by partner authorities, and that's therefore Sedgemoor, Bridgewater, Willerton in West Somerset, and Loughton in South Somerset. In a sense, they're relatively straightforward. By coincidence, they're the three sites that our bidders are not anticipating doing a huge amount of development on. So the other category is the private sites where we've got leases. Effectively, we've got leases with two private landlords, one in Taunton at Walford Cross, it's north of Taunton, and the other at Evercreech Junction Industrial Estate. there will be significant works being undertaken at both those sites to provide facilities and infrastructure, plant and equipment, buildings, etc., for us to implement the new services for Recycle More. There will be a complete re-equip, effectively, at both those sites. And in order for us to do that, we've got to get the leases in a state of readiness so that we can do that, and we've got confidence that we've got effectively legal grounds for carrying out those developments. And they will be subject to planning. So there's an awful lot to do there. Mickey and I were talking to one of the landlords yesterday. We've got all of the bits in place. We just need to get the signatures on the bottom of the bits of paper, really. We've got all the agreements we need in principle. So, but it's, you know, these negotiations are time consuming, and that's one of the things we're on to at the moment. The other thing we've got to, you know, really start focusing on now is getting security that the vehicle suppliers are able to achieve our deadline of the 28th of March. Again, so I've really upped the engagement I'm having with vehicle suppliers. We're in a sort of a slightly difficult situation. We can't give them a commitment for orders. We won't be placing the orders, but they know these orders are coming through. So we're trying to do this by seeking reassurance and gaining confidence from them, giving them confidence that those orders are going to flow through, but we don't actually know who they're going to flow through to until the 27th of February. So it's very much about preparing the ground, keeping these things alive, keeping these people aware of what our requirements are, and particularly in relation to, we're not the only people buying trucks. And so we've got to try and position ourselves so we get exactly what we want for when we need it, so that those trucks are going to be available for the 28th of March 2020. And I think that's about it. But just bear in mind, if you ask me anything now that I can't answer, I can answer it after the meeting in a confidential briefing, but see how we go.
Anybody want to ask anything that's not going to breach the confidentiality bit?
David.
Oh, David.
Thank you, Derek. Could you turn your mic off, please?
It is on. I didn't realise it was on. I knew.
Must have been the microphone fairies. Anyway, I'm not sure whether this is a question for you, Bruce, or for you, Mickey, but I know it's a big question, but does the National Strategy for Resources and Waste that you took us through earlier give you any cause for concern or hesitation in terms of the Recycle More direction of travel?
Not in terms of Recycle More, so I think, you know, it validates what we said. Focusing on quality materials, keeping separate collection at the curbside is the right thing to do. I think, so if anything, it gives a massive encouragement to that. Clearly, the deposit return scheme, as I highlighted, is a risk because we don't know what that will do to materials. Clearly, free garden waste is a risk. So there are risks there, but on the central thrust of it, no. And you know, what we expected in terms of a policy timescale is still what we expect, and therefore the review point which we've put into the contract in terms of the recycling risk share is still at the right point in the contract and still the right thing to have. The work we've done on changing law provisions is still the right stuff. So, yes, there are risks. We can't avoid that. There is uncertainty, and therefore that creates risk because I can't guarantee what the future looks like. I couldn't anyway, even if there weren't policy changes. But there's nothing more that I wish we'd done that we haven't done. So
the only bit I'd add to that is those change of law provisions. So we've dealt with in this situation a lot of known unknowns. We know these things are going to happen, but we don't know how they're going to happen, when they happen, or what all their impact is going to be. So we've through our legal advisors, we've made very good provision for those types of changes, and they're quite bespoke actually because of the circumstances we find ourselves in. So we've very much had our eye on this while we've been looking at that. Yeah, as much as we can do, I think.
I am, Chair, and again, I think most of it's already been heralded, principally in the sense of your next meetings. You've already spoke about considerably, which is the meeting on the 29th of March, particularly in terms of the core item of business at that.
Yeah, we issued one before Christmas around the National Resources and Waste Strategy, and I would expect that we'll issue another one once the consultations come out and we've had a chance to get our head around them a bit. Thank you. I mean, there's not loads to say that's confidential. I guess I'll just highlight in terms of, I guess it's a bit to do with depot, well, to do with vehicles and the timetable. It's just across the partners, we've got 25.5 million approved. Until we get bids in, we don't know exactly how much we'll need to borrow. We don't know when we'll need to borrow. We can't know for certain that actually we'll need to borrow at all. I could probably say I'm 99.9% confident we will need to borrow, and it will be absolutely be worth all our whiles to do that borrowing. It is highly likely that whichever bidder is successful, they probably wouldn't be prepared to sign on the dotted line for a contract until we're confirming that we definitely will borrow. So we're doing work with your officers through SMG and through, particularly with Section 151 officers, to highlight that point that actually we will need to convert what are just approvals to borrow into, yes, we're definitely going to draw that down. We understand the timescale. There's a fair bit of detail to understand in terms of cash flowing that borrowing, especially as vehicles kind of drip through in the coming year. And there is, you know, and clearly as Bruce highlighted, every week you don't place an order for vehicles, that's between 4 and 6 vehicles that aren't produced in potentially in time. So that's probably the big driver, and we did meet with the vehicle supplier yesterday, who's most likely, we can't guarantee it, but again, probably 90% certain they'll be building our vehicles. So we had a very detailed conversation with them about that, trying to get to that understanding of, how do we firm that up? And one of the possibilities there is we may need to write some kind of letter of intent for a certain amount of money, which will probably be a large amount of money, but not the total amount of money. We're just working that through, and we'll be engaging with your Section 151s. But it's just to reiterate the importance. If we don't get that borrowing, you don't get this service kind of thing. So it will be absolutely critical to make sure that happens in this, you know, very constrained time window. That's probably the only thing I wanted to highlight. Really just wanted to give you all an opportunity to ask any questions that you couldn't ask in public session.
Thank you, Chair. The Daily Telegraph carried a warning yesterday about German and Swedish vehicles, where the manufacturers are saying that after Brexit, a 10% increase is planned. I don't know what company you're looking at, but can we bear that in mind, that any figures that you're asking us as district and county councillors to do, we may have to inflate that figure by that 10% or more?
Yeah, I mean, it's highly likely that the vehicles will be manufactured in Southern Ireland, though with probably chassis from somewhere in Europe, some hydraulics from Germany, some electronics from the US. You know, so it's a very complicated supply chain, which is one of the things we are talking through with the vehicle manufacturer tomorrow. But you're right, it's certainly a risk, but a risk that probably we understand a little bit better after yesterday, but is subject to forces way beyond our control. So you're absolutely right to flag that as a risk.
The magic world.